Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. You know the guys. Their new show gets simulcasted Monday through Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. All hours of the show get podcasted, so be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin now, as well as The Right Time on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with over 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com/baseball. The Right Time is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, your worst nightmare, thinking Aaron Donald is stomping you out. Also, we will take your voicemails on the worst date that you have ever been on and a big change for life in New York City. But first... All right, guys. So I want to take you back. I used to do this television show called High Noon. And I was doing a show with Pablo Torre. And Pablo says that he was a Knicks fan growing up, right? Like, that's his thing. He was a Knicks fan growing up. And then he bailed out on them and decided to start rooting for the 76ers because who wouldn't root for a general manager who doesn't even work there anymore? Anyway, we had a disagreement about when Tom Thibodeau got that job. And you ain't getting a whole lot of fun out of a Tom Thibodeau team, generally speaking, right? It's like 90s-ish basketball, grinded out, mad physical. Your best players are going to play all the minutes in the world. But I always thought he got a bad rap as an offensive coach because at the end with the Bulls, the problem was they didn't play defense and they played great offense. Like, he's a bit more flexible in that regard than I think he gets credit for being. But he's not a cat that's out here about to reinvent the wheel in any sort of way. But my thought on the Knicks was, Thibodeau was the guy to hire because y'all can't be out here talking about championship dreams at this point if you're a Knicks fan. Y'all just need to be out here seeking competence. Mere competence was the way to go with the Knicks. And then once they got to a point of competence, then maybe you can start talking about, I don't know, maybe they can make the playoffs or something like that. But the Knicks been sorry for 20 years. Now, keep in mind also about the Knicks, the Knicks haven't been sorry forever, but they haven't been good very much, like, ever all time. Like, they won that championship in 1970, and they won one, I think, in 1973. When the Celtics were out here beating everybody up, you ain't never really getting nothing, hear nothing back in the day about, yeah, but the Knicks were right up there with them. Nah. That part never came up before Patrick Ewing got there. They were terrible. They had a decent little run with Ewing, and then the last 20 years, they've been booty. Right? Booty. No other way to put it. They have been booty. Carmelo came. They were so happy about Carmelo coming that they pretended like Carmelo was from New York. You remember that? They did a whole thing about Carmelo coming back home. The dude got a tattoo on his shoulder that says West Baltimore. West Baltimore. But Melo was coming home. Melo's wife may have been coming home, but Melo was coming to New York because he was born in Brooklyn, just like Michael Jordan was, and he ain't from New York neither, right? But that's what it was. There was one time where the Knicks were down 3-0 in a playoff series, and then they won a game, and I lie to you not, they dropped confetti from the ceiling over one playoff win in a series that they were going to lose. And people were like, yeah, well, that was sponsored by Party City. Whatever, man. That's how y'all get down, right? Knicks fans. Okay. But, I was right, damn it. They are competent now. The Knicks are the sixth seed in the East. Julius Randle made the All-Star team. Hey, man, I'm telling you, and I know that, Gabe, like, you're not really of the age to be able to appreciate this because you've never seen it before. The league is so much better when the Knicks are good. I don't even mean that the league is better when the Knicks are great. I simply mean the league is better when the Knicks are good. And the reason why the league is better when the Knicks are good, Knicks fans. I will make this argument right now. I don't really get in too much about who good fans and bad fans are, right? And a big part of why I don't do this is if you look around at all the leagues and when people talk about the teams and cities that have the best fans, man, they fans be racist as hell. You ever notice that? Like all the places where they start talking about where the fans are so good and everything else, they really like to say that about places, A, that ain't got no black people, or B, places that like to pretend like they ain't got no black people. Oh, them blue collar cities. You know what I'm saying? It's always funny. The collar is always blue, but the neck is always white. Like it's always just white people. Gabe, you were afraid I was going to say red, weren't you?
No, I was just trying to think of what sports towns you could be talking about.
Think about this. St. Louis Cardinals, right? People love to talk about how the St. Louis Cardinals got the best fans in baseball. There is a Twitter account that is dedicated to pointing out how true that is not about Cardinals fans. I think the account is Best Fans STL or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is, but I follow it, right? And it just gets you to all the terrible things that Cardinals fans be out here saying. But yeah, the people that supposedly have all the best fans, it's always these places where they ain't got no black people. I don't understand why it is they think the white people are better at being fans. I think part of it is, and this is actually what I do think part of it is, what it comes down to. White people feel more of a bond with like the city element of their teams, by and large. That's really what it comes down to. And data ESPN has compiled over the years has actually borne this out. Like with the NBA, for example, black people are more likely to root for players than for teams. So if your favorite player leaves and goes to a different team, you tend to go to the team with your player. That is far more of a phenomenon with black people than it is with white people. I think there's a lot of explanations for that, like migration patterns within the country, you know, all of that sort of stuff, like when it really comes down to. And the places in large part where black people lived in this country historically have not had teams. Like the Sun Belt and the South have started to get more teams. But see, New York is interesting because the black people in New York love New York, boy. They feel an absolute attachment to New York City and they love the Knicks. And then you got all the white folks that also love the Knicks, you know, because this thing, basketball is a thing here in a different way. They love the Knicks. And they look for any reason in the world to get optimistic about the Knicks. It don't take much. It only takes a little. And they get charged up like, hey, man, I don't know. Like very reasonable people that I know that are Knicks fans. Very reasonable people. They turn into something else when it's time to start talking about the Knicks. And they know they're doing it as they're doing it, but they can't help it. And this is why I say they might be the best fans in the league. Because they stick with the Knicks. They not getting off that narcotic. They not quitters like me. They stay with the Knicks. They ride that out. And then once they get that glimmer, they're like, hey, guys, I don't know. This could be it. This could be it, right? And nobody with the Knicks is being unreasonable about this season. They seem to be reasonably happy simply by the fact that they have reached this point of competence that I discussed before. They got an all-star in Julius Randle. They got, what's his name? RJ Barrett, right? Reason to think that there might be a future for the New York Knicks. Like, I mean, I just feel like this whole year for them, you just got to be happy, man. You've got to be thrilled that this has worked out the way that it has worked out for you guys. Good for you. But y'all are still Knicks fans, right? Oh, wow, Gabe. I'm actually looking at the roster. They look a lot more impressive in the standings than on the sheet. Thibodeau needs to be coach of the year. Listen to this. Their third leading scorer is Derrick Rose, and their fourth leading scorer is Alec Burks. And they are getting significant minutes from Elfrid Payton.
The people that you're naming, this is like a still in the league roster, man.
Hold on. Don't let that Laker fan in you start talking about Julius Randle as a still in the league candidate. He's what, 26? And you're putting him in still in the league territory? He's on the All-Star team.
Yeah, that says something about the East All-Stars.
What? He's balling this year. Are you really doing this?
Balling on a mediocre team, too.
Wow, Gabe, I did not know that you had this in you. He's averaging 24 and 11 and 6 assists and shooting 40 from 3. What you got to say now?
I'd like to see it just over an extended period of time. That's all.
A whole season is not extended enough for you? Did he break your heart, Gabe? Is that what it is? Did he somehow break your heart? Is that you associate him with when your Lakers were sorry, right? When you Lakers fans were a bunch of losers out here in the streets? When the Knicks were better than y'all? Is that what the problem is?
Has he shown this level of performance his entire career up until this season?
There's room to develop, Gabe.
I know, but we're talking about him as if he's like going to be the cornerstone of the franchise going forward.
See. I'm not saying he's going to be the cornerstone of the franchise. I'm saying he's the beginning of competence. You know who's going to be the cornerstone of the franchise for the Knicks?
Who's that?
Zion. Zion going to be the cornerstone. You guys see this? The Zion after the game, they went and did that thing where they asked him about playing in New York. And Zion was like, man, I just love playing here. He's went on and on about how much he loves playing at Madison Square Garden, that he loved playing there in college. He loves playing there now. This is even after they lost the game. He just got this big smile on his face that he couldn't fight about how much he loves New York. See. And Knicks fans, I'm going to do this to you and make fun of you at the same time for it, okay? Zion ain't going nowhere for 5 more years, at least, okay? This is the way it goes in the NBA. Everybody stays with that first team for 7 years. They always sign the first extension. They always go into free agency before the third contract. That's just the way this always goes. I can only think of one player who has voluntarily turned down an extension and taken the qualifying offer so he could be an unrestricted free agent at the end of his deal, and that was Greg Monroe. And it worked out okay for him, but nobody really does that. You get the bag, and then if you need to lead that team, then you find a way to muscle your way out of there. That's generally the way that it winds up going, right? But I saw it in the Knicks fans. I saw it. Zion said he wanted to come there. And now that you've gotten back to this point of competence and you're like, yeah, we got Julius Randle. Zion would love to play for Julius Randle. He went to college with R.J. Barrett. He would love to play with R.J. Barrett again, although nothing about his time at Duke would make me want to play with R.J. Barrett again. But hey, you never know. And see, Knicks fans is bubbling up in you. It's getting there. You feeling it. You there, right? Like you back, you get a little bit more. You wouldn't even dream of saying that you was going to get Zion to come there before because you wouldn't even play for the Knicks at that point. But now you get into this whole nother place. I see it. I feel it within you. And that is why Knicks fans are the best. They really, really are. Because on one hand, it's charming their level of dedication and their affection for their own team. On the other hand, we can always get them charged up like this. And then when it doesn't happen and they wind up being depressed, we can then laugh at them and ridicule them. They've been convincing themselves for 30-something damn years that somebody want to come to them as a free agent. One dude has wanted to do it. One. That was Carmelo. That's the only one. Like, of all this class of players that they thought they was going to get, they got close to getting Michael Jordan one time. Real, real close. They got themselves charged up. Michael Jordan stayed with the Bulls. Michael Jordan was never going to come play for y'all. But see, that's Knicks fans. That's where it is. You know how bad I want for there to be a Knicks-Nets playoff series with people there? That will be so dope. The Nets will probably blow them off the floor. I totally understand that, but I'm just telling you, it's going to be something. It's going to be interesting. It's there. And then Zion going to come a little bit later, and then everything's going to flip, man. But I will tell you what this reminds me of. I don't know if you guys remember this, but when Zion was at the lottery, he did not look happy when the Pelicans wound up winning. But more specifically, he looked unhappy that the Knicks did not win the lottery.
That's something that I feel like people forgot pretty quickly, including myself, who was supposed to win in that lottery.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. A whole lot would be different about the league this year if Zion had gone to New York. A lot would be different. Because I don't know if you've seen this. Like, ratings apparently are down again this year. And I think they're down from last year. They're down from what they were before COVID, I guess. I don't have the math done exactly on like they're down and exactly how they're down and what the comparatives are or everything else. But the NBA does have a problem with viewership and people like watching games. And this year has been interesting. Like, we'll talk about this more at some other point on the podcast, but there's an argument to be made that the NBA needs LeBron to retire. And I say that because LeBron sucks up all the oxygen in the room. Like, everything about the league has been centered around LeBron James now for about 15 years. But he's not that interesting anymore. Like, what's there really to pay attention to at this point? What are we really charting? What are we really checking for? And we got so many good players in the league. We got so many interesting teams right now in the league that I feel like in a different year, we would have paid a lot more attention to. You know, like, for example, what's going on in Phoenix right now is bananas. we're not really paying no attention to that. Like, it doesn't help that the two best teams in the West are in the Mountain Time Zone, which is a great place to get forgotten. But I think there's a lot of things that are going on right now. And so LeBron's hurt, and it makes people just kind of feel like, oh, okay, well, what's there to pay attention to, right? The 73-9 Warriors didn't win a championship. That kind of ruined the regular season for a lot of people. We got a lot of guys who are hurt this year because of the compact schedule, you know, and all this stuff. But Zion Williamson somehow is living up to the massive hype, and nobody really seems to care. Like, basketball fans seem to care and be paying attention to it, but you would think, given the way that he was playing, that it would be a much more massive story across the board, and it's just not happening in the way that I would thought, especially because he came in as a star. I thought that, I mean, and remember last year when he came in, it was a big deal that he came, and we paid attention to all the games that he was playing, and we're just not doing it this year, even though he made the All-Star team at, what, 20 years old, and he's been cold as hell. We just not doing it. But if he played for the Knicks and he was doing this, this would be the number one story in the league.
They'd have two All-Stars, right?
Yes, they would have two All-Stars. Gabe, they would have two All-Stars. But they would be balling. They would be it. So we got to get Zion to New York, baby. Apparently, that's what it's going to take to get y'all to pay attention to him. And if he's there, dude, if the Knicks and Nets were good at the same time and you had Zion, man, it would be cool. Everything would be great. So I'm begging you, Knicks fans, I'm going to not make fun of you. Hold on. Hold on until we get there, because I need you to still be there. I need them to get there because the league needs something. And if all these incredible players aren't going to do it, then galvanizing people around their love of the Knicks or their hatred of Knicks fans, that's the way we're going to do it until Zion comes home. So we had an interesting development take place over the weekend. A gentleman told the world that he got beat up by Aaron Donald. Said he was out at the club, said he bumped into Aaron Donald, said Aaron Donald took him out. Now, you guys need to understand something. At this point in my life and at this point in the world, Aaron Donald might be the last person in the world whom I would want to fight, who is not a professional fighter. Like, back in the day, my brother used to have this game, and it's a pretty good one. What would it take to make you slap Ray Lewis in the face? Like, what would Ray Lewis have to say to you or do to you to make you slap him in the face? But you've just finally had enough, and I just got to slap Ray Lewis in the face. What do you think it would take, Gabe? What would it take for you to slap Ray Lewis in the face?
A promise that I would be retired to the back 40 and I would never have to work again.
Oh, yeah. I hear you. But I'm just thinking, like, what would Ray Lewis have to say to you, knowing what the end result is going to be? What would Ray Lewis have to say to you to make you slap him in the face? Can you imagine anything?
Personal insults, I can handle it. Maybe like insulting my wife. When you start insulting my wife, that's...
Yeah, that's when you cross the line. But how far across that line he got to go to make you slap him in the face? Like, he could say something untoward towards your wife, but I know the first step is going to be, hey, Ray, come on, man. We ain't even got to, you know, we ain't got to do it like that. I'm not insulting you. I'm not saying this is anything about you, because that would be me. De-escalation would be the approach that I would take. Like, how long would Ray Lewis... like consistently have to insult your wife before finally I just had to slap Ray Lewis in the face? What would it take? I've struggled to come up with an answer on similar things. Like, you talking bad about my mama. I mean, you wouldn't be the first.
That's a good question.
I mean, I'm not saying you wouldn't be the first to insult my mama to my face. Like, that doesn't happen, but you get what I'm saying. Like, I just don't know what it would take for me to slap Ray Lewis in the face and just tell him I've had enough of whatever is going on. Aaron Donald is now the active leader in that. When you see the clip of him working out with the dudes with knives, and to say the knives aren't real, but he's still out here working out with dudes with knives. And on top of that, play the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
So, Gabe, you understand why I'm saying now that, like, Aaron Donald is now, like, at the top of the list for me on guys I would not flap in the face?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So this dude came out, and he was wearing, of all things, a Washington State football hoodie when he was telling everybody that he got snuffed out by Aaron Donald and that he would be taking legal repercussions in order to try to, you know, get himself some justice because he got stomped out by Aaron Donald. And Gabe, I'm assuming you saw the picture of the dude, right? With his eye all closed up. And did you see it where somebody, his eye was so closed up that somebody did an outline of like Homer Simpson's face on top of it? And like where Homer Simpson got the beard and the, you know, and like that was what his eye was. It was like Homer Simpson's beard. It was all puffed up with a line in the middle. That's where he was from catching that L. That's where it was. It was real bad news for that dude. And then we ultimately found out that what had happened was this dude got stomped out in an alley, but it wasn't by Aaron Donald. In fact, it turns out that Aaron Donald at the end came in and cleared everybody out. He had actually been stomped out by other people at the time. And if you get a chance, go watch that video. Because I went and watched that video and I tell you what it made me think about. That was like a wrestling scenario, right? It's like if you could imagine that the Macho Man was in the ring and he's getting stomped out, right? And then out of nowhere, the Hulkster has found out what has happened. And then you hear, you know, coming out the speakers, I am a real American. And now the Hulkster comes and runs out. Because you know how that goes in wrestling. Dudes are getting stomped out. And then one dude comes and clears five people out, right? Get them out of there. The best is when the dudes from wrestling come into the ring to save you, but they're not wearing their wrestling clothes. Like they're wearing street clothes to make you feel like they wasn't even supposed to participate, but they decided to come in. And so next thing you know, the Hulkster comes in there and he got on like some jeans or whatever. And after he clears out the ring, he rips off his shirt. And then everybody hears it, fight for the rights of every man. You know what I'm saying?
As if he was like in the kitchen doing dishes or something.
Yes.
That's your music.
That's right. That's right. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life. And the Hulkster comes in to save the Macho Man while the Macho Man is on the ground. And then the Macho Man comes to after he's been stomped out. And he sees the Hulkster, except the Macho Man misunderstands what the situation was. And the Macho Man thinks that the Hulkster is actually the one who stomped him out. And now the Macho Man gonna be mad for weeks, for days, at least until the next show, right? Because all he knows is he just got stomped out. He's a little woozy and he looks up. And there's the Hulkster, and the Hulkster's out here doing the poses and everything else because it's always all about the Hulkster. He ain't come out here just to save the Macho Man. He want everybody to know that he is the real American who came out here and saved the Macho Man. And now the Macho Man is a little bit salty about this. And then the next day, you know, like if this happened at the pay-per-view on Sunday, now the Macho Man got to come on All-American Wrestling or Primetime Wrestling, whichever one was the one that came on Monday night before they started doing Raw. And then next thing you know, the Macho Man could always tell the Hulkster getting a little bit too close to Miss Elizabeth. Like, I'm not the Macho Man. Like, I don't have something for you. And there I am, laid out on the ground. And here you come, the American flag, like you're some kind of patriot. You want to stomp out the Macho Man. Oh, no, that's not going to happen. Oh, yeah, I'm telling you right now. We're not going down like that. That's what this dude was. This dude just came out the next time, and everybody's like, no, the Hulkster was saving you. The Hulkster only worries about saving himself. He doesn't care anything about the Macho Man or about anybody else. That's where the Macho Man was. That's where this dude was. Then they come, and they got the video. The next thing you know, this dude finds out that, you know, it was somebody else who stomped him out. And so the way that would then play out is the Macho Man would have been in the middle of the ring explaining to everybody where he was coming from. And then the Hulkster comes out, right? And they're in the ring together. And they used to have the best stare downs, right? And they just be, you know, eyes bulging. They both looking at each other. And the Hulkster is trying to explain to him, you know, Macho Man, I thought I was helping. I do a terrible Hulkster. I thought that I was helping you, brother. That's right. And the Macho Man's like looking back at him. And he's looking back And you know that tense moment that will come in wrestling between the two of them. Also, because the Hulkster is a lot taller than the Macho Man, especially when he has them lifts in his shoes. He used to wear lifts, in case you're curious. He used to list the Hulkster at 6'8 when he was really 6'5. So anyway, they're looking at each other, and then it comes time for the handshake. Because when two good guys got beef, there's got to be like a handshake to bring it together. And then finally, the Hulkster just sticks his hand out. Come on, brother. And then the Macho Man looks around. I don't know. I don't feel like this is a guy that I can trust. And then he looks at Miss Elizabeth, and Miss Elizabeth looking over there with her eyes wide open. Who are you looking at right now, him or me? And you can't figure out which way to go about it. And then finally, they shake hands, and the mega powers have come together. They become a tag team. So my question is, when will Aaron Donald and this gentleman who just got stomped out become a tag team? That's the next step in the evolution right there. Because I'm going to tell you this too. Outside of Steven Jackson, I can't think of anybody that I want to come save me in a fight like that more than I would want Aaron Donald. Because look, Aaron Donald came in there and just got everybody off of him. Steven Jackson would have come in there and broke some jaws. All right, like there would have been some other people laying out on the ground at that moment when it happened. But whoever the Macho Man, was it DeVincent Spriggs, whatever that dude's name was that wound up laying out on the ground, I 100% understand why he thought it was Aaron Donald who stomped him out. My question is, where was your partners? Either your partners was A, not helping you fight, or B, improperly identified Aaron Donald as the person to stomp you out to make you feel better so you didn't just feel like you got stomped out by some randos. But he got stomped out. It was vicious. And now he got to go apologize to Aaron Donald. Whew, good luck, buddy.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from politics.
This is Ivan Pereira, digital reporter with ABC News. On March 31st, New York State legalized recreational marijuana for adults over 21. It is now 15th state in the country to allow for regulated cannabis use and possession among adults. As part of the new law, New Yorkers will be allowed to possess 3 ounces of marijuana and grow up to 3 mature pot plants at home, with a limit of 6 per household. Marijuana sales will be taxed at 14%. 9% of the tax will be allocated to the state. 3% of the tax will be allocated to the municipality where the sale was made, and the remaining 1% will be allocated to the county where the sale is made. 40% of tax revenue will be earmarked for communities that were disproportionately affected by prior drug laws. Another 40% will be earmarked for schools in the state. The remaining 20% of the money will go for drug treatment and education programs. Governor Andrew Cuomo's office estimates recreational marijuana will generate up to 60,000 jobs and earn $350 million in revenue for the state. Sales aren't expected to begin until 2022 at the earliest, since the state legislature has to set up the Office of Cannabis Management, a new regulatory agency. The new law directly addresses New Yorkers who are affected by old drug laws. Anyone previously convicted of possessing an amount of marijuana that is now legal under the new laws will be subject to expungement and resentencing. Marijuana legalization advocates have called the new law a win and said it will put pressure on other states and Congress to follow suit.
Look, man, he said that the day was the 31st that went into effect. Let me tell you something. There was no gradual ramping up in New York City of this process. As soon as that thing went into effect, you could smell it wherever you went. You can now smoke weed anywhere it is legal to smoke a cigarette. Dog, it's a haze. Somebody told me they went down to the village and it's just a haze everywhere you go. Like, people immediately jumped on board with this one. 100%. The cats that you used to see try to be slick about it, like try to dap up the weed man with like the money in his hand. No, they ain't even doing that no more. It's just like, oh, that's right. Finally, we can share everything. And then they going like the world unlocked. And it's just the moral of the story. Nothing like your governor getting embroiled in a bit of a crisis or two to all of a sudden do things that people wanted. Because what it seemed like New York had been doing was like waiting on New Jersey. Because once New Jersey did it, they were just going to have to, because they couldn't let all that money just go over the bridge. Nah. They went ahead and got on it. And then with the smoking on the street, I think they just figured out if they were going to try to arrest people for smoking on the street, they would not have any, it would basically be the same thing that it was before. So now they just got to let people smoking on the street. It is a new day in New York City, and the weather hadn't even gotten warm yet. I don't know what June is going to look like. All of a sudden, you're going to see all kinds of black folks wearing Grateful Dead t-shirts. They don't even know who the hell they are.
All right, this next story also comes from politics.
My name is Peter Hawley, and I'm a senior editor at Texas Monthly Magazine. My latest story is about the lingering impact of the Texas snowpocalypse. That's the winter storm that slammed into the state and knocked out power and water for days in mid-February, killing close to 200 people. So nearly 2 months have passed since the storm struck Texas, and life here has pretty much returned to normal. But I recently learned that there are still people in Houston who are living in homes without access to running water. These residents live in a part of the city known as Third Ward, a historically black neighborhood that is home to Texas Southern University, a number of prominent black churches and local businesses. Despite the fact that the city celebrates Third Ward's culture and history, it's also a place where more than 40% of the residents live below the poverty line, and their struggles are conveniently, routinely ignored. That seemed to be exactly what was happening when I interviewed residents whose homes still lacked running water, but were now filled with broken pipes, black mold, and electrical outages. Despite living in a neighborhood surrounded by prominent museums, universities, and one of the largest medical facilities in the entire world, these residents were still struggling to wash their children. In one home, I found a family who was forced to ration bottled water for their four kids each day. In another, I found a woman who was sleeping in a bedroom that reeked of black mold. Broken pipes had left holes in her walls, and she was worried about rats and possums crawling into the house at night. And finally, there was a 72-year-old woman in a wheelchair who couldn't leave the house. She was reliant upon bottled water donations, but was never sure when they were going to arrive. When I spoke to her, she was thirsty. Since the article came out, there's been an outpouring of donations, and city leaders, including the mayor, have suddenly gotten involved. But there's a larger question that still needs to be answered. How long are cities like Houston, New Orleans, Flint, Michigan, and so many others going to tolerate their most vulnerable citizens living in conditions we normally associate with the developing world?
First of all, shout out to the return of MV Peter Hawley. Good to hear from Peter. Now, I mean, there's really not much more for me to say than what you heard there, right? Like, I think the biggest reason we wanted to put this in here is just so you know that this thing is still going on. But Third Ward in particular becomes interesting because Third Ward is Black Houston in the eyes of a whole lot of people. Like, that, when you start talking about Black people in Houston, Third Ward is what you are by and large talking about. But the things in Third Ward, like you mentioned Texas Southern, but the University of Houston is in Third Ward. Like, there's, you know, he's talking about the medical center and all that stuff. Like, the things in Third Ward are not necessarily Black, but the people absolutely are, at least in the way that most people think of Third Ward and the portrayal of it. And so, like, when you say that this is going on in Third Ward, to me, you're telling me that this is happening specifically to Black Houston. Not that's the only place where Black people in Houston live, but that is like the cultural epicenter of Black Houston. And it is wild that this is still going on, and it's not some giant story. Like, we've got all kinds of stories about Ted Cruz and about the governor there and, you know, where they all mask and all this stuff and everything else. And you still got this situation in one of the largest cities in America. This isn't Flint, Michigan, even New Orleans. Like, those are not big cities. Houston is the fourth largest city in America. And this is what they still shaking off from what was just gross negligence in the situation that got them here in the first place. And it's just crazy to me that chances are, if you hadn't heard this here, you wouldn't have known it.
Houston's the fourth largest city in America.
Yeah, Houston's been the fourth largest city in America for like 30 years. Well, it's not the fourth largest by density, right?
Yeah, you're talking Houston. County too, right?
Well, not all of Harris County is in Houston, like, just to be clear. But it is, I mean, we got a lot of real estate, so it just goes all over the place. But it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And it is the most diverse city in America, which makes it a bit more, like, sound worse that the problems we're talking about seem to be so specific to Black people in dealing with it in a city that, again, is literally the most diverse in America.
This next story comes from the environment, but it's also a travel story. Here it is.
I'm Daniel Victor. I'm a reporter at the New York Times, and this is the story of the angry octopus. So this starts with a family on vacation in southwestern Australia. The dad is walking along the beach with his two-year-old daughter when he sees an octopus in very shallow water. It's kind of sizing up a seagull. He turns on his camera and gets reasonably close without going right up to it, when all of a sudden, bam, the octopus briefly constricts and snaps all eight of its legs right at the dad. It didn't actually hit him, but his reaction is key. Take a listen.
Oh, golly.
I got the dad on the phone. His name is Lance Carlson, and he said if he knew his video was going to travel around the world, he might have chosen a different reaction. I think most of us would have probably used very different words if an octopus lunged at us, but he said he was holding his daughter, so those words weren't an option. Unfortunately for Lance, the story is not over. He went back to their tent, dropped his daughter off with his wife, and about 20 minutes later, he went for a swim. About 30 meters out, he noticed a pile of crab shells piled neatly together. When he dove underwater to get a better look, he remembered seeing in a documentary that octopuses tend to pile up crab shells. And in almost that exact moment, bam, the octopus whipped him right across the arm. Then bam, got him on the neck and down the upper back. He said the pain wasn't too bad, kind of like getting whipped with a wet towel. And he doesn't know for sure that it was the same octopus from before, but that is the prevailing theory. If he has any concerns now, it's just that he's worried the story might make people afraid of their friendly local octopus. He doesn't want that. He wants you to go to the beach freely and show love to the octopus. They're usually our friends.
Yeah, I might go to the beach, but I'm shook. I'm officially off it. Like, the thing about octopus is one of them animals that, like, we don't think about having a personality. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't realize that octopi were the types to come and just come smack you around like that. Who knew? This guy does.
Dude, octopus are really smart, too. They're the ones that are always, like, escaping from the aquarium.
Oh, that's true. That is true. I never know what to do when we talk about how, like, smart all the animals are. Like, I ain't never heard them say nothing that I found to be that brilliant. You know what I'm saying?
At least with octopus, though, people do talk about how smart they can be and all the different, like, games and puzzles and stuff that they solve. Should be kind of obvious, though. They got those big old brains.
Ah, that's true. There's that. Yes, the octopi. Like, does that mean all the other animals are annoyed by the octopi always telling them how smart they are?
Probably. And how cool the octopus is with all those tentacles, man. They got the big brain. They got the tentacles.
And it's fair. They, like, the jellyfish got to really be looking at them like, why not us?
Yeah, and also, too, octopus can go on land for very brief periods of time. So you got the octopus able to go up to the beach, but can also do the deep sea thing, whereas jellyfish, kind of once they hit that sand, it's kind of...
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie, though, man. I see an octopus walking up on me on the beach, and, like, I ain't got no gun, but the Texas in me would reach for one. Octopus for dinner.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. Did you catch wind of the most awkward date story kind of topic that was doing the rounds on Twitter?
Yeah, I did. And I will tell you the most awkward date that I've ever been on. I'll give you that off the rip. It was actually my first date. I had mustered up the courage to ask a pretty girl to go with me to the movies. I believe I was 14 years old. And we were in the car riding to the movies. And so I don't know if y'all had dollar theaters where you was at, but in Houston back in the day, you used to have the dollar theater. So, like, after the movies got past the first run at the big theater, they had the dollar theater, right? And so I was riding with her and she had a friend come with her because she was like, yeah, my mom isn't sure about me going out with somebody she doesn't know by myself. So I was like, okay, cool. That makes sense. And so from where we were going, there was a dollar theater in one direction and a dollar theater in the other. And my sister was driving us, and my sister assumed that we were going to dollar theater A when the girl assumed that we were going to dollar theater B. So as we started going to dollar theater A, the two girls look at each other and I'm like, what's going on? They're like, I thought we were going to the other dollar theater. And they were really panicked about the fact we were going to the wrong dollar theater. And it hit me while I'm sitting there and I'm like, who gonna be at that other dollar theater? Steve. Oh, man, that was a punch in the stomach. That was a stomach punch. Yes, yes. I was just the transportation.
Oh, no.
That was awkward. That was awkward.
That is actually a really good setup for our first voicemail. The guy didn't leave his name where he was from, of course.
That's fine.
Trying to protect himself. Here it is.
The most embarrassing date I've ever been on. Wasn't that embarrassing when it was happening. It was embarrassing in hindsight. So it was springtime, and love was in the air. I thought a couple years ago, I was tattooing professionally. I just finished my apprenticeship. I'm working in the shop, feeling really good about myself. I decided to go on the internet, start doing the internet dating thing, match with a very wonderful-looking young lady. She was an art student. I thought, great. So we go out. We get some coffees. We get some donuts. There's a little punk rock donut spot just down the way from where we both were. So I thought, hey, this will be great. So we go there, get our coffee, get our donuts, and I think we're having a great time. It's not uncomfortable at all meeting a stranger from the internet, or at least meeting this stranger from the internet. We're talking about art and life. We're telling jokes. We're telling personal stories. A real good connection. It felt really inspiring, and I felt really happy about the whole thing. And she said at the end of it all, she said, you know, this was really great, and thanks. I said, thanks. She said, yeah. She said, this is going to be a great piece for my senior project. Because, Bo, what she was doing, she told me, was going out on dates with strangers from the internet so she could make collages about it later and present them as part of her senior project for art school. And I and my wonderful date were another leaf in her portfolio. At least I got something out of it, being immortalized in a piece of art.
Wow. You were just an experiment. At least she told you.
Told him at the end of the date.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to, right? Otherwise, it kind of taints the whole situation at that point. You need to get him in his most natural state. I see no reason why this would preclude us from going out again. If it was really rolling, like, look, all right, now that we got that out the way, let's do this for real.
Yeah, we kind of like stepping outside of the bounds of the project here. Fall in love along the way.
That's what I'm saying. That could have been the beginning. I thought that I was just simply using him as an experiment, and I turned out it was love.
Is that what I am? Just a project to you?
Yeah, and her answer was, yeah, that's exactly what you are.
All right, this next one comes from Ryan in Southeast Louisiana.
It's my junior year of high school, and I went on a date with a girl that I was on the track and field team with. She was a year under me. We went to the movies, but the only way that she was allowed to go on a date is if her little brother, who was a freshman, went on the date with us. So us three were sitting there, her in the middle, me on one side, and her brother on her other side. And, I mean, I was being in high school at the movies. We started kissing and whatnot, and her brother just had to sit there the entire time. And it was painfully awkward, and I felt real bad for this man.
Yo, you didn't care? Like you a G among G. I guess this, that actually reminds me of a different awkward date that I went on. This is when I was an adult, and I had met a woman at some club who was probably the best looking woman, at least up until that point, that I had ever. Like, and she pressed up on me, right? Like, I later saw her in a major music video. But anyway, I met her at the club and I'm like, yo, so what you doing tonight? She's like, I gotta go home. My daughter's and I had a babysitter. I'm like, cool. I'm like, so what you doing tomorrow? I'm like, she's like, hey, nothing. Let's go see Bruce Almighty. And I told her, I'm like, I just need you to know this. In 3 days, I'm moving. And that was the truth. I was moving out of California in 3 days. I just wanted to make it clear what kind of timetable we were working with. So I get to her house. And I walk in and I'm talking to her, and her daughter's there. Her daughter's like 7, 8 years old or something like that. I'm like, hey, what's going on? And her daughter's like, do you like animals? Because she liked animals. I was like, yeah, I like animals. She's like, do you like children? I'm like, yeah, I like children because I legitimately do like children. I'm not thinking nothing of it. So we're sitting there. And the next thing I know, her mama come out the back, but she got two jackets in her hand. And one of them jackets was really small. And I'm like, oh no. Oh yeah. It was a party of three. And then after the movie, the little girl tried to go to a pet store and wanted to buy a rabbit. And her mom was like, no. And then her mom started thinking about it. And I was like, y'all ain't bringing no rabbit in my car. So I came up with some excuse as to why it was that I could ultimately leave. But I actually remembered that story as it was told. And I guess I can't judge my man too bad, because I do remember at one point being told, yo, my daughter's right there. Like, she's watching a movie.
Wow.
I was like 22.
Wow.
Yeah. By the way, hit the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
All right. All right. And this last one, this woman didn't leave her name or where she was from, but a good story to cap us off here.
Hey, Bomani, picture this. The guy and I start making small talk, and then he whips out his phone and said, I want to show you something. Okay. So on his phone notes were tons of his top 10 lists, like top 10 movies, TV shows, bands, you get the idea. And then the dude goes, you will notice that 5 of my top 10 albums are Red Hot Chili Pepper albums. In my shock, I gasped, so you must really like the Chili's, huh? He nods without saying a word, lifts up his shirt while maintaining eye contact with me, and reveals that he has a Red Hot Chili's band tattoo on him.
Yeah, yeah, you wait on that. You wait on that. I was actually waiting on her to say that it was Anthony Kiedis.
Top 10 lists. Do people have top 10 lists?
I don't just keep them on deck. Like, trust me, dude, she would have figured out that you were a really big Red Hot Chili Peppers fan.
Yeah. I don't know what was the most awkward part of that story. Keeping the eye contact.
Yeah.
Here's my tattoo.
Yeah, well, it sounds like she said raised up his shirt. Yeah, it sounds like he needed more real estate. Yeah, you did the arm. He needed more real estate. Like, he needed to get it done up there.
Yeah.
Learn something new every day. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here 3 times a week. Gabe Bassan and Tony Colletti, you handle things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Ivan Pereira of ABC. Check out his story on New York legalizing marijuana at abcnews.gov. Thanks to MV Peter Holly of Texas Monthly. Check out his story about Houston's third ward still not having running water at texasmonthly.com. And thanks to Daniel Victor of the New York Times in London. Check out his story on an angry octopus at an Australian beach. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.